and lies. The overwhelming emotion charging through her being was devastating helplessness. The blackbird quietened down, nestled in the eaves of the roof, and Lottie retraced her steps, counting the faded brown doors along the corridor with tarnished brass knobs, paint peeling beneath from years of hands, young and old, twisting and turning. Since it had been abandoned to itself, the building had died. Doors needed to be opened. Doors to a forgotten past. Maybe Susan and James had tried to unlock them, in the metaphorical sense. Look what had happened to them. Her gut was telling her this building held the key to the overall puzzle. She opened and closed a few doors to empty, desolate spaces, and she assumed the rooms had once been small dormitories. She turned the handle on the next and stepped inside. It was similar to the others, though here black plastic bags covered the windows, smothering the room in darkness. She felt along the wall and flicked a switch. A low wattage bulb, suspended on a dust-covered wire, spread a modicum of light over the space. Lottie looked around. An iron-framed bed against a wall, dressed in white sheets. Stepping further into the room on bare, uneven floorboards, Lottie twitched her nose. A faint hint of washing powder lingered on the cotton. She turned the pillow and raised the mattress. Nothing. A clinking sound caused her to pause, sheet in hand. Silence. Ears alert, all she heard was the wind brushing snow against the window and the refuse bag rustling in a breeze through a gap in the sashes. She studied the room. A bed, a small gas heater in one corner, and a wooden chair in the other. Nothing else, except paint peeling from the ceiling and shadows deepening in yellow tremors from the slightly swaying light bulb. Turning to leave, she caught a glimpse of a sliver of metal at the leg of the bed. She swept her fingers through the dust and touched the object. She slid it toward her, cradled it between her cold fingers and lifted it to the light. The silver pendant shimmered against her latex-swathed hand. She knew exactly who the pendant belonged to. Jason twisted his head, sure he'd heard knocking against the wall. The binds on his arms and legs constricted him to the floor. The gag in his mouth prevented him from shouting. Someone was looking for him. Exhilaration rushed through him, and he strained his body against the ropes. But he was securely bound. Despair overtook him, and he slumped against the floor. If they were in the main part of the building, would they search further into this section? Would they know it even existed? He hoped they wouldn't give up too easily. He was getting weaker. He strained his ears once again, listening, seeking a sound, however small. His moment of hope shattered, doom settling into the pit of his stomach where it churned and lurched. To the echo of birds crowing high in the rafters of the roof, he vomited over himself. Chapter 85.
Hello there, Sean Parker, is that right?
Outside the game shop, Sean turned round.
What's it to you?
He leaned against the shop window.
I recognise you, that is all.
So, what do you want? Sean asked, and waved at one of his friends across the street.
I know your sister and Jason very well. Do you know he's missing?
Sean inched back further, but there was nowhere else to go. Yes, I know.
This may seem odd, but he's not missing. I actually know where he is.
Why don't you go to the Gardaí, then?
Jason does not want them involved. There's a family dispute or something.
Okay, but it's nothing to do with me. Sean edged closer to the door of the shop. The man shook his head and took a step back.
That's fine. Sorry to bother you.
He turned to walk away. Sean bit his lip, sized the man up and down. He looked respectable, well-dressed, clean, even though he had no overcoat in the freezing cold snow. Odd. He looked familiar. Had he seen him somewhere recently? He couldn't remember. He didn't appear to be a threat. Just some old guy who knew his sister. Sean asked, "Where is he?" The man faced him. "I cannot break any confidences, but I can show you where he is. That way you can say that you stumbled over his hiding place." "Sure. Come with me." Chapter 86. Lottie banged the steering wheel. The car wouldn't start. Snow lay thick on the ground. Not freezing. Not yet. She continued to turn the key, getting an empty click in reply. With the pendant in a plastic bag in her pocket, she sat thinking. She knew who owned it, and thought she knew how it got there. And she had to talk to Rickard about the windows. The anomaly was bugging her, crawling under her skin. Jane Doerr's number flashed on her phone. "Hello, Jane."
"I've completed Father Mohan's post-mortem."
"You're busy and quick," Lottie said. "Same as the others?"
"Not the same, no," the pathologist said. "Less force was used by the perpetrator, but then he was an old man."
"Do you think it might have been a copycat killing?"
"I doubt it. Cornelius Mohan had the same tattoo as Susan Sullivan and James Brown."
Lottie held her breath for a moment. An old priest with a tattoo. What next?
"It's like the others, old but more defined. I scanned the image and enlarged it," Jane said. "The tattoos on the other victims were faded and looked like lines in a circle. But with this one, I can actually make out the drawing."
"Go on," Lottie said, hoping it was something definite.
"It looks like the Madonna and Child icon, often depicted as a sculpted statue in churches. So Wikipedia tells me."
Lottie glanced up at the top of the building in front of her. The statue she'd struggled to see through the darkness at St. Angela's the other night with Boyd was the Virgin Mary with the infant Jesus in her arms. "You could be right," she said. "But I still don't understand why Susan and James had it. And Patrick O'Malley," she recalled.
"If it means something, you better find out. Before any more bodies end up here."
Listening to the dial tone, Lottie knew she had to speak to O'Malley again. He was looking increasingly very important. As a witness to a murder perpetrated decades earlier, or was he involved back then? Involved now, even? No matter what, he potentially held vital information. She'd have to get him to remember. Her phone interrupted her thoughts.
"Inspector, this is Bea Walsh, from the council."
"Hello, Bea, how are you?"
"I just wanted to let you know that the planning permission for St. Angela's was approved today."
"I suppose it's easy to blame the dead for that," Lottie said. "So Rickard can go ahead with his hotel plans?"
"Not exactly. There's a waiting period for the public approval process, though I don't think there'll be too many objections. This development will create jobs."
"Thanks for letting me know."
"And, Inspector, the file wasn't missing at all. Jerry Dunn, the county manager, had it."
Lottie mulled over the two phone calls. Attempting to assemble the information in her head, she failed. Intruding on her brooding was the fact that her car wouldn't start and the cost of getting it fixed. Longing for a cigarette, or anything else on which to concentrate, she scanned the expanse of grounds blanketed with snow. Her eyes rested on a walled enclave sweeping to the rear of St. Angela's. A crescent of snow-covered trees inched above the stone walls. The orchard. An image zoomed through her mind. Young Susan and James, with O'Malley and Brian, whoever or wherever he was, being terrorized by Father Conn. At least three of them were now dead. Chapter 87.
"Do you really know where Jason is?
Sean asked the man as he sat into the car.
Yes, I do. That's some coincidence, isn't it?
What coincidence?
You knowing me and also knowing Jason, Sean said. Can you put the heater on?
Of course I can. The man pulled out of the car park into the line of traffic and turned up the heat.
It won't take a minute to warm you up, young man.
Sean asked, How do you know who I am?
I know your mother too, see. You are the image of her. I would recognize you out of her a mile away.
Everyone tells me I'm the spitting image of my dad.
I do not know your dad, the man said, waiting for the lights to turn green.
He's dead.
Sorry for your loss.
So how do you know my sister and Jason?
I'm a friend of Jason's father. You could say we are in business together.
Sean lapsed into silence as the man drove the car carefully through town. Swirling snow slowed their progress.
Once Jason was home, Katie would be happy. She'd owe him, like, forever.
Sean smirked, proud of himself.
What are you smiling at? The man asked.
Oh, nothing, Sean said, still grinning.
Where to? Kirby asked, chewing his unlit cigar.
This car stinks, Lottie said, pulling on her seatbelt. Stale tobacco smoke crawled off the seats into her clothes. She had to leave her car until they got jump leads. Kirby didn't have any.
I want to talk to Tom Ricard, but first I need to see Boyd.
You won't get near him, Kirby said.
I don't give a shit, she said. Mind the icy road.
She gripped the dashboard as Kirby swerved, narrowly avoiding an oncoming car.
Smoke your cigar if you want.
Your wish is my command.
He lit the cigar with one flick from a lighter. I found this in St. Angela's. Lottie held up a small plastic evidence bag containing the silver pendant. Kirby eyed it sideways.
Nice. Why would it be in that old place?
That's what I'm going to find out.
So you know who owns it?
I do, Lottie said.
Will it cost much to fix the car?
Kirby said, the price of a pint.
I can afford to buy you one pint. My budget won't stretch to two.
That bad, huh? Kirby grunted. Lottie nodded. You don't by any chance know how to fix a PlayStation.
Moron, the man said, righting his car.
He exited the main road and drove up the side road and through the rear entrance gate into St. Angela's.
Where are we going? Sean asked.
You ask a lot of questions, the man said through gritted teeth. Just wondering.
The man edged his sleek vehicle in behind the small chapel and switched the engine off. Sean slipped his hand around the cold metal in his pocket, glad he had this talisman with him. Something suddenly told him he should run like mad, to get away as far as he could. Before he could react, the man gripped his elbow tight, propelled him towards the arched wooden door with a shiny new padlock. Though he was not yet 14, he was tall, but in the time it took the man to open the padlocked door, Sean felt tiny. He didn't know if it was because of the man's eyebrows tightening into a scowl or the secure hold on his arm. One thing for certain, he was glad he had his knife with him. The door closed and the man slid a bolt in place.
Why do you do that?
Security.
This way.
Sean stood his ground. If the door was locked from the outside, he began, how can Jason be in here of his own free will?
The man's jaw tightened. Sean backed against the door.
I told you I would bring you to Jason. Be a good lad and do as I say. He's not here at all, Sean screeched. Who are you?
He held onto the knife in his pocket, hoping the man wouldn't notice.
How stupid to let himself be dragged here.
What was the best thing to do? Hope Jason was here and go along with the man to find out? Or fight back and escape now. If he used the knife, He could get out the door. What if he was leaving Jason behind? What would his mother do? He had to think fast, or he was going to be in a shitload of trouble.
Stop asking questions. Come.
Sean made his decision and allowed himself to be led down the dull, narrow corridor, his hand clenched firmly around his knife.
Chapter 88.
Standing outside the nurse's station, Kirby said,
"At least he's out of ICU."
Lottie rolled her eyes. He was annoying the shit out of her. Never shut his mouth. Always had to be saying something. She took a deep breath, trying to instill a calmness she could feel.
"How did you get on in Rome?"
he asked.
"Did you just wink at me?"
Lottie walked up to him, locking eyes. He stepped back.
"I didn't mean to. It sort of happened."
Kirby pulled at his unshaven jaw. "Don't try to be like Boyd. It doesn't suit you."
"You can see the patient for 5 minutes. No longer. He's weak, but conscious."
A young, blue-uniformed, blue-eyed nurse held the door open.
"Only one of you," she said,
the upturned palm of her hand stopping them.
"You go,"
Kirby allowed Lottie to pass. Boyd lay propped up on the bed, a multitude of wires meandering from various areas of his body to monitors, standing like robots around him. The nurse pressed a tube, peered at the liquid passing through. Satisfied, she turned to Lottie.
5 minutes.
She left Lottie alone with Boyd. Pulling over a chair, Lottie sat close to Boyd's head. His eyes blinked recognition, their hazel hue dulled. He tried an unsuccessful smile.
"I'm sorry," she whispered.
"I shouldn't have traipsed off to Rome, leaving you to get into trouble without me." She smiled as Boyd attempted a weak grin. "I know you're not supposed to talk, but can you remember anything about your assailant?"
"No small talk,"
a crusty croak from Boyd. "When Kirby told me what happened, I was terrified," Lottie said. "I thought you were going to die, but I tried not to think about that. You know me. Buried myself in work all morning." She clasped his hand, feeling the length of his fingers in her own, bent her head, and kissed the scratched skin of his forehead.
"Don't cry," Boyd whispered.
"Chance'll be a fine thing," Lottie said. "I saw the killer's back.
Familiar, not sure. I'm no help."
"Could it have been O'Malley?"
"Don't know."
Lottie found tissues on the locker and wiped spittle from the corner of his mouth.
"It doesn't matter. I'll get him. He'll be one sorry bastard when I'm done with him." "Be careful,"
Boyd said, his voice gathering strength. "No point in ending up here too. Or maybe they've a double bed."
"Wise arse," Lottie said.
"I'm baffled why the killer struck when you were on your way to see the priest. Did you tell anyone besides Lynch?"
No one.
She mulled over this for a moment, confident that Lynch had nothing to do with it, and if Boyd had told no one else, then the only person who knew was Father Joe. She noticed how weary Boyd looked. This wasn't the time to tell him of her suspicions. His eyelids closed. "Get better quick. I'm lost without you." She fluttered her lips on his brow as the nurse returned. With a backward glance at the now sleeping Boyd, she left the room, determined to put an end to the killer's quest. Chapter 89. "I've no further information regarding your son, Mrs. Ricard, but I need to speak to your husband." Lottie leaned against the door jamb of the Ricard residence. Melanie walked inside. She followed. Tom Ricard rose from his armchair in anticipation. She shook her head. His face slumped. "As I told your wife, I've nothing new on your son's whereabouts. We've issued a press statement, it's on social media, and we'll get television coverage. Inspector, I'm fierce worried, Ricard said. We're doing all we can. Lottie sat opposite him in the chair he indicated. Sitting in his crumpled suit, Ricard's eyes were red-rimmed. A log fire blazed. The room was warm.
Tea, coffee?
Melanie Ricard asked.
Tea,
thank you, Lottie said. She felt something in the atmosphere between Melanie and Tom Ricard. Ice? Melanie escaped to the kitchen. About St. Angela's, she began. I'm more concerned with my son's welfare at the moment, he said. Who else has keys to the building? Ricard shrugged.
My partners. You have my set.
Why do they have them? I provided them with keys ages ago in case they needed to check out the place. I never asked for them back. I've no idea if they use them or not, Ricard said.
What has that got to do with anything?
I don't know, is the honest answer, Lottie said. She held up the bag with the pendant. Do you recognize this? Ricard glanced away.
No. Should I?
I thought you might. Are you sure?
God damn it, woman, what are you doing to find my son?
She rose to leave. The fire was too comforting to sit any longer. Another thing. Do you have St. Angela's original floor plans? I need to see the layout. Ricard shrugged aside and hauled his bulk from the armchair, a bear walking from winter's hibernation. He extracted a rolled-up document from a desk in the corner and handed it to her.
Keep it. I've lost all interest in the project, he said, and returned to stand beside his chair.
Even though you got your planning permission?
My son is more important to me now. When you're finished with those, you can burn them. Just find Jason. Make it your priority, I'm begging you.
Ricard turned towards the fire, staring at the orange flames leaping over the burning timber. Lottie rose to leave. Melanie arrived with the tray. She put it on the table and placed a hand on her arm, lips silent, eyes pleading. Lottie nodded, feeling the other woman's anxiety. She left the couple to their lonely despair. Chapter 90. Look at this, Kirby, Lottie said, pointing to the plans laid out on a desk in the incident room. I was right.
About what?
She rolled her sleeves to her elbows and drew a circle on the page with the yellow highlighter. The plans show the corridor with 16 windows on the second floor. I counted 13 inside, but 16 on the outside.
Which means what, exactly? Kirby asked, searching his pocket.
She tapped the drawing with the marker. It means there are three windows behind a wall, which also means there's an extra room or rooms blocked off.
So what?
He ventured.
So why? Lottie asked. Why do that? Who did it? When?
That's what I want to know.
What does it mean?
What has it to do with the murders?
I don't know. But we have nothing else and I need to find out. Do you have an address for O'Malley?
He lives on the streets. Go look for him.
She glanced around the room, noticed Lynch studying the incident board.
Something doesn't add up, Lynch said.
What do you mean?
Derek Hart, Brown's lover. I reviewed his statement and I think something's not right. He either lied to us or was economical with the truth.
I can't find him registered as a teacher in any school.
Follow it up ASAP.
Lottie hadn't time for this now. She was on a mission. I think Mrs. Murta, the woman who runs the soup kitchen, might know where Patrick O'Malley's hanging out. Give me the car keys, Kirby.
I haven't seen him,
Mrs. Murta said, leading Lottie inside, shooing the dog out. The kettle was boiling and warm bread rested on a plate in front of Lottie.
Where are his usual haunts? Lottie asked.
Patrick O'Malley could be anywhere, Inspector. At night, he usually beds down on Main Street. Sometimes you come across him behind the train station, in the carriages, or in one of those houses, you know, the old terrace with the roofs caved in. But I haven't seen him anywhere these last few nights.
Lottie sighed. I'll get someone to look for him. Mrs. Murta poured the tea and they drank from mugs.
Where is your skinny partner today, Detective Dotty?
The name is Lottie, and D.S. Boyd was injured last night. He's in hospital.
That's awful. I'll say a prayer for him. What happened?
Nothing for you to worry about. Lottie checked the time on her phone. I ought to be getting on. Thanks for the tea.
That reminds me of what I was trying to think of the last time you were here.
What does? Mrs. Murta fidgeted with the crumbs on her plate.
The phone.
What about it?
Not your phone.
The old woman hesitated, said,
I have Susan Sullivan's mobile phone.
You what? Lottie abandoned her smile and clenched her hands.
Where is it?
It could be vital to our investigations. Why didn't you give it to me before?
I forgot I had it, and now I'm not sure I even want to give it to you, Mrs. Murta said, folding her arms rigidly.
I could charge you with impeding a murder investigation. We might have been able to prevent another murder. There could be vital information on that phone. Lottie knew she was being irrational. They'd got all the information from the service provider. Seeing the look of confusion on Mrs. Murta's face, she tried to soften her voice.
It is okay. Don't worry.
As long as you hand it over now, it will all be fine.
It mightn't even work.
That's beside the point. Lottie dug her nails into the palm of her hand and gritted her teeth.
How come you have it? I just remembered it all now. Susan let it fall in the soup. Ruined one batch completely. We had to make more. Such a hullabaloo.
When was this?
The evening before her murder. I put it in a bowl of rice in the hot press. That's what Susan said you're supposed to do.
Why didn't she take it with her?
We were busy. Forgot all about the phone when we came back from our soup run. And the poor soul was killed.
And you kept the phone?
She was murdered the next day,
Mrs. Murta explained, tears in her eyes.
You should have given it to me. I forgot I had it.
She raised the teapot questioningly. Lottie put her hand over her mug, refusing the gesture.
Susan is dead.
Her secrets could help solve her murder. Can you get me the phone now, please? Mrs. Murta rose slowly and went out to the hall. Lottie heard a cupboard opening and closing.
It's hard to know what could be on it after the soaking it got.
The woman returned and handed the phone to Lottie. Not much, thought Lottie, putting it into a plastic bag before sliding it into her handbag.
There's something else too,
Mrs. Murta began, rubbing her forehead.
Go ahead. St. Angelus. Susan mentioned there were two priests there.
Go on.
After she met Bishop Connor, she was in an awful state. She'd arranged to meet him to see if he could release records to help in her search for her baby. I thought she'd seen a ghost.
Did I tell you that?
She told me she recognised the bishop as a priest from her early days in Ragmullen. What? I'm telling you what she told me.
Lottie struggled to get her head around the implications of what she'd been told. Of course. Susan had been back in Ragmullen only a couple of years. She had had no reason to see the bishop before her arranged meeting with him. Did it also mean Bishop Connor knew two of the victims from their time in St. Angelus? He hadn't mentioned it. Then again, it might not have been him at all. Something else for Kirby to pin on the incident board.
Susan and James looked out for each other over the years. You need to look out for them, now that they're gone,
Mrs. Murta said. Lottie stood up, desperately trying to batten down her anger. The old woman wrapped the bread in tin foil.
I'm sorry,
she said, handing over the bread. So am I, Lottie replied, placing the bread on the table. And if you see Patrick O'Malley, contact me immediately. Before you forget, she thought, I need to speak to him.
Mrs. Murta suddenly looked older than her age. Grasping the crooked handle of her stick, she walked Lottie to the door. Lottie didn't even say goodbye as she sat into Kirby's cigar-stinking car. Chapter 91. Sean opened his eyes. His head throbbed. Attempting to sit up from the ice-cold floor, he found he was bound with the rope around his neck, his arms and legs similarly constrained. He struggled to remember where he was. What had happened? He lay still and listened. No sound. He thought hard. Memory flashed and dimmed. The man pushing him through the door, knocking him to the ground, and that was it. He twisted around, trying to see something, anything. Enveloped in the darkness, he focused his eyes, but it was blacker than anywhere he'd ever been. His stomach bubbled with fear and terror crawled under his skin. His phone vibrated in his pocket. No way of getting his hand to it, and he realized the bastard hadn't taken it. So maybe he'd missed the knife. Couldn't tell. Tears flitted unshed at the corner of his eyes. It didn't matter. There was nothing he could do now. Suddenly he was a little boy, all bravado disintegrating with the realization of the hopelessness of his situation. And he began to cry. Like the little boy he was at heart. Chapter 92. Lottie paced the cramped office after dispatching Susan's phone to the technical geeks. She informed Kirby what Mrs. Murta had said about Susan recognizing Bishop Connor.
"I told you to let me kick the shite out of that lying bastard," Kirby said.
"Quick word." Lynch touched Lottie's elbow. "Just a minute, I need to call home." She phoned Chloe. "How are things?"
"Fine. Sean went into town earlier on,"
Lottie said.
"Why did he go into town?" "He hasn't stopped complaining about his PlayStation, so maybe he wanted to check out a new one."
"Put him on."
"He's not back yet. Probably gone to Niall's house. I texted him to see what he wanted for lunch. He didn't text back."
"Probably no credit. Typical," laughed Chloe.
"Message him on Facebook."
"Why didn't I think of that, Mother?"
Chloe said with mock sarcasm.
"How's Katie?" "Thick, as usual." "Any sign of Jason?"
"I'm working on it," Lottie said. "Let me know when Sean gets home."
"Will do."
She hung up and turned to Lynch.
"You wanted to ask me something?"
"I want to talk to you about Derek Hart. Is now okay?"
"I need something to distract me. Go ahead." Lynch folded her arms, a file clasped to her chest.
"I reviewed all the paperwork, examined his statement again, then I ran a check on him."
"Tell me."
"I think we fucked up, Inspector. Big time."
"Oh, shit." Lottie pulled two chairs over to a hissing radiator, and they sat beside the heat. Lynch flipped through the file on her knee.
"Hart told us he worked in a school in Athlone. We assumed he was a teacher."
"But he's not." Lottie stared at Lynch.
"For God's sake!"
"He's not registered as a teacher anywhere, but he does odd jobs. The last known place was St. Simon's Secondary School in Athlone. He gave false information on his application and an address in Dublin. I searched Pulse. Found him."
"Convicted of something?"
"Served 5 years of an 8-year sentence for the abduction and sexual assault of a minor. Released from Arbor Hill Prison 11 months ago."
Lottie mentally weighed up the enormity of Lynch's revelation.
Whose fault was this mess?
Her own. Everything was her responsibility as senior investigating officer. She would definitely be hauled in front of the chief superintendent, if not the Garda commissioner. Corrigan would explode. And Lynch would escape without blame. Shit. As for the school, they mustn't have checked him out at all.
What about the Garda clearance certificate?
What a mess.
Christ almighty, she shouted. Why wasn't this discovered days ago? I can't tolerate incompetence. And to think I empathized with the little prick in his fake grief. I'll kill him myself when we catch up with him. I checked out the address he gave us. He rents a bedsit. Lynch handed Lottie a photograph of the convicted Derek Hart. He looked totally different from the grief-stricken man who had found the body of James Brown. Shaggy beard, long hair, dark, dead eyes. The bastard. He had now soared to number one on her suspect list. "Give me the good news," Lottie said, throwing down the photo and pulling at her worn sleeves, feeling a tightness in her chest. She began to cough. "Are you all right?" Lynch asked. Lottie tried to answer but couldn't. Lynch fetched a paper cup, poured water from the dispenser. "What's wrong?" She handed the cup to Lottie. Lottie sipped and felt the wave ebb. "You're exhausted," Lynch said. She didn't want Lynch's sympathy. "It's only a cold. Find Hart. You and Kirby chase him down, before Superintendent Corrigan gets wind of this latest fuck-up. Straight away. Print off his history. I need to know what we're dealing with." Lynch scooted through the door, ponytail slapping against her shoulders. Lottie glanced out the window, over the road at the cathedral, standing majestic in the afternoon sepia fog. The street lights were warming up. The scene appeared surreal. Just when she thought she had everything connected, she was thrown another curveball. And she had things to discuss with her doctor, other than a cold. She opened her drawer, picked up the silver pendant she'd found at St. Angela's, pocketed it, banged the drawer shut. Chapter 93. Annabelle O'Shea looked as extraordinary as usual. An impeccable navy skirt suit, a white shirt, with a hint of a red bra visible throughout the sheer silk. Making a statement, Lottie thought. After her five-minute walk on icy footpaths to the doctor's Hill Point surgery, she was soaked in sweat. "I didn't have time to make an appointment." "You look dreadful. Sit down." Annabelle offered a chair to Lottie before perching on her leather-topped desk. "I have your prescription." "I haven't time to go to the pharmacy. Can't you give me a few pills? Just for now." "What's the matter?" Annabelle inquired. She leaned back to a cabinet behind her, extracted a couple of boxes, read the labels and handed one over. Satisfied it contained benzodiazepine, Lottie pocketed it and took the small plastic bag from her pocket and placed it on the desk. "This is yours?" she said, pointing to the silver pendant in the bag. "Explain how I came to find it under a bed in St. Angela's." Annabelle glanced at the pendant, face inscrutable. Lottie imagined her friend's brain whirring, formulating what she thought might be a satisfactory answer. "This is not mine," Annabelle said, pushing it away from her. Lottie's laugh broke up with a cough. "Others might believe you, Annabelle O'Shea, but I don't." The doctor picked it up again. "I'm sure lots of people have a similar pendant. I haven't time for games, and I'm definitely not in the mood," Lottie said. Annabelle threw the jewellery down on the desk, stood up, and walked to the door. Short, sharp steps. "You got what you came for. Please leave." Lottie remained seated, turning the small plastic bag round in her hand. "Tell me, Annabelle, I want to know." "If it is mine, what does it matter to you?" "Because St. Angela's is part of my investigation into the murders in this town." "Nothing to do with me." "For Christ's sake, Annabelle, tell me." "Okay, calm down." Annabelle sat. Lottie did too. "I go there, now and again, with my lover," Annabelle said. "Who's this lover?" asked Lottie, blowing her nose too loud in the confined space. "You don't need to know that." "I do." After a pause, Annabel said, Tom Rickard.
What?
He said he'd leave his wife, Annabel said, when we had enough money to set up together. He's always involved in some scheme or other. She paused, closed her eyes, and then opened them wide. To tell you the truth, I'm getting weary of him. Lottie snorted her disgust. Same as always. Wanting what you can't have. Never stopped you, though.
Not everyone can have the marriage you had.
But what about Cian? Your
children.
But what, Lottie? What? You think it's just me? She laughed bitterly.
You do, don't you?
You think I'm the only one fucking around in their marriage?
You're a bitch, Lottie said, leaning over the desk.
You know me. I take what I want, and I wanted Tom Rickard. Were you with him the day of the Sullivan and Brown murders?
Probably. When was that again?
You know right well it was December 30th.
Let me see.
She checked her computer diary. Yes, I believe we were together then. Some meeting of his was cancelled and I wasn't working, so we met up. And a few more puzzle pieces slid into place for Lottie.
That's why he couldn't provide a definitive alibi.
He didn't want to betray you.
Didn't want his wife to find out.
You should have told me this when I spoke to you about Susan Sullivan. You never asked.
Clever answer, Lottie said. She'd had enough of Annabel, her secrets and lies. She rose and went to the door. Sometimes you can be too clever for your own good. Annabel was silent.
When did you last meet him? Lottie asked.
2 days ago. She shrugged her shoulders, I think.
At St. Angela's?
Of course.
I pity you, Annabel. You have brains, money, a good family, and here you are acting like the spoilt brat I always knew you were. Goodbye.
Outside the doctor's surgery, Lottie leaned against the wall until her breathing returned to normal. Tom Rickard could have saved her a lot of trouble if he'd been truthful with his alibi from day one. She started walking back to the office. Sirens were blaring down by the train station as she crossed the canal bridge. The water was frozen. A sheet of snow glistened on it under weak lamps. Blue lights flashed beyond the old carriages. She hurried down the hill and through the town, oblivious to the still twinkling Christmas lights, forlornly inviting non-existent customers to venture through shop doors. Cold chewed into her bones, but she was too numb in her heart to feel it on her skin. On the steps of the Garda station, a black crow stood on the snowflakes, his beak hard and grey, claws long enough to pluck an eye out of its socket. Flapped his wings once, but didn't move. Lottie felt him staring as she walked up the steps. An icy shiver travelled the length of her spine, and she knew what people meant when they spoke of foreboding.
The chattering in the incident room dropped a decibel when she entered.
"What's up?" she asked. "Oh, God," she thought, gripping her sides with her folded arms. "Boyd?"
"No," Kirby said, twisting in his chair.
"Well, are you going to tell me?"
"We found another body," he said.
"Jason?"
Lottie sat down quickly. "No. A body was found beyond the old railway carriages, in one of the dilapidated terraced houses."
"I hope it's not O'Malley."
She got up and walked around the desks. "He was looking like one of our most likely suspects."
Lynch said, "The body was probably there for a few days. The face gnawed by vermin. One arm missing and two fingers gone from the other hand. The toes too. A bag of bones and rags." She spoke in the abstract, not referring to the body as a human being. It helped distance the horror.
"It better not be O'Malley," Lottie snapped. "According to Mrs. Murta, that area was one of his haunts."
She banged the desk in frustration. "Is there any indication yet if it's murder?"
"Possibly hypothermia," Lynch said. "The state pathologist is at the scene. Will we head down there?"
She grabbed her coat. A soft murmur of activity resumed as detectives returned to their work. You go. I'll stay here. Lottie gripped the back of her chair, hoping they hadn't another murder on their hands. If O'Malley was dead, who was left to answer her questions? Would St. Angela's evil remain secret forever? She hoped not. Did you track down Derek Hart? She asked. He's not at either of his addresses, and his phone is dead, Lynch said at the door. Find him. Lottie went to find solace at her desk. And get me the journalist Cathal Moroney. Chapter 94. It must be getting dark outside, Sean thought, because he was much colder now. He hoped his mother was out looking for him. Would she even know he was missing? He hoped so. He heard footsteps, strained his ears. The door opened and a shaft of muted light silhouetted the man framed in the opening.
How is my young man?
The voice was hoarse and gruff.
What do you want? Where's Jason? Sean asked.
No patience, the youth of today.
The man tut-tutted and entered the room. Sean felt the ropes and chains loosening. Dragged to his feet, he stumbled, then straightened up. But his knees buckled once more. The man's arms crested under Sean's, leading him from the room. Let the bastard think he was weaker than he actually was. The man halted outside another door and opened it. Sean felt a push in his ribs and staggered inside. The stench of vomit filled the air. Squinting, he tried to see in the darkness. On the concrete floor, Jason was lying in a fetal position, his hands covering his head. His chest and feet were bare, and his jeans open at the waist.
You wanted to see Jason. There he is, the man said, trudging over to the boy on the ground.
Jason didn't move a muscle, and Sean wondered if he were asleep, or even dead. What was going on? Should he run? In the time it had taken him to find his way out, Jason could be dead. Instinctively, he knew the bastard was going to kill both of them. Urging up a well of energy, Sean quickly ran back into the hallway, pulled the door and turned the key in the lock. Maybe he was consigning Jason to his death, but if he had a chance to escape, he was taking it. He breathed a sigh of relief leaning against the door, then turned to find his way out of the building, and stopped. The man was standing in front of him, a rope in his hands.
How? How?
Sean stammered, his feet grounded to the floor. The man grabbed his arm and twisted the rope in a knot around Sean's wrists and around his hands. Sean kicked out, catching the man's knee. He aimed for the groin, missed. Turning, he pulled on the rope, trying to get away, all his energy concentrated on escape.
Stop it!
The man wheezed, catching Sean and doubling the rope around his waist, restraining his movement instantaneously. Now disabled, Sean collapsed against the man.
Where did you come from? How did you...
Did you ever hear of a room with two doors?
The key turned and the door opened once more. Sean was pushed inside.
Have a nice chat, the man said. I'll be back.
There was no sound from Jason. Arms still bound, Sean crawled over to him.
You okay, bud?
Jason groaned, sounding like an animal caught in a trap. Sean had heard a sound like that once before, the only time his dad had taken him hunting. What would a hunter do if he were trapped? Thoughts twisted around in his head, and he switched his mind to his PlayStation games. Maybe he would find an answer in the virtual world. He always won in that domain. Closing his eyes, he gently laid his bound hands on Jason's shoulder.
We'll get out. Don't worry, he whispered.
But he wasn't so sure. Chapter 95.
Did our tech guys find anything on Susan's phone? Lottie asked.
They're working on it, Kirby said.
But I doubt there's anything different to what we got from the service provider. The only calls were to and from work. She didn't appear to be into texting. Oh, and Tom Ricard is ringing here every 5 minutes. We'll get Jason's disappearance on the 6 o'clock news. You have a photograph? Got this off the lad's Facebook page, Kirby said, waving a photo at Lottie. Not a bad-looking kid. Ugly tattoo, though. Is your Katie going out with him?
I suppose she is, Lottie said, tired of small talk. At least Boyd had a knack of lightening a banal situation. She missed him. She took up her phone to ring the hospital.
Corrigan put his head around the door.
Cahal Moroni is at the desk asking for you, he said, pointing an accusatory finger at Lottie.
It's okay. I want to see him. About Tom Ricard's son, Lottie said, putting away her phone. Cahal Moroni edged by Corrigan into the office. How did you get up here? Lottie stood up.
I smiled at the lovely young one at the desk, Moroni said.
Corrigan backed out of the office. Kirby gathered a couple of files and shuffled off after him. Moroni sat himself at Boyd's desk without being asked. Lottie was about to object, but decided she needed Moroni on her side.
What's this about another body? Moroni switched on his phone recorder.
Can I get my camera crew to the scene?
In a minute. First I need your help, Lottie said, trying to be polite. And turn that off.
Moroni made a dramatic display of holding up his phone and putting it in his inside jacket pocket. How can I be of service? She showed him the photo of Jason Ricard.
Is he dead? Moroni asked.
I hope not. He's the son of the developer Tom Ricard, Ricard Construction. He's missing and we need help in locating him. Can you run a story on the evening news? She passed over the details.
Is this connected to the murders?
Not that we're aware of.
Is it on Facebook and Twitter?
Yes. We're monitoring social media for any response. I'd appreciate some television coverage. It was galling her to be nice to Mr. Megawatt. She handed him another photograph. We're also looking for this man.
I recognize him. Moroni tapped the picture. Can't put a name to the face, though.
Did he used to have a beard?
Derek Hart, Lottie said. The bollocks who abused that kid up in Dublin 6 or 7 years ago. Isn't he behind bars?
Not anymore.
A convicted sex abuser and a missing teenager. Come on, Inspector, I didn't come down in the last shower. Enlighten me. Why do you want his mugshot on the news?
Moroni leaned over the desk, a spark of interest glinting in his eye.
Lottie had to be careful with her words. Realistically, she couldn't say he was a suspect. She might be sued. Better to keep the reporter in the dark on that issue.
We are concerned for Jason Ricard's safety. We need to locate Derek Hart. Can you help us? She smiled sweetly.
Certainly, Moroni said. Your face is healing up nicely, Inspector.
Just concern yourself with the faces in those two photographs, Mr. Moroni.
After eventually getting rid of Moroni, Lottie found Chloe and Katie standing outside her office. Chloe held a pizza box and a 2-litre bottle of Coke.
We thought you could do with an energy boost. Bet you haven't eaten all day, she said.
You're just like your granny, Lottie said. And of course you're right, I haven't eaten.
She led the girls into the office. Where's Sean? She asked.
Haven't seen him, Chloe said. Must be at Niles.
Katie sat beside her at Boyd's desk.
Ma'am, where could Jason be?
We're looking for him, don't you be worrying.
Chloe perched on the edge of Lottie's desk.
He's probably having a weed party somewhere. You're just jealous.
Girls, please, I'm tired. Don't start. Lottie placed the box on her desk and dished out slices of warm pizza. She was hungry, but in no form for eating. She ate it anyway. The girls were silent, eyes downcast. Guilt welled up inside Lottie. She wished she could spend more time at home. She thought of the mothers who had abandoned their children in St. Angeles. Her own mother had abandoned Eddie. Was she as bad? Did it run in her genes? Wish Sean was here, Chloe said. Sean is fine, Lottie said. I'll ring him now. Leave a voicemail if he doesn't answer, Chloe said. Sean, you better ring me back, or if you've no credit, message the girls on Facebook. I'm giving you 5 minutes. Chloe said, you are so intimidating when you're mad, Mother. No, I'm not, Lottie smiled.
First Jason, now Sean, Katie said.
Shut up,
Chloe said, slamming the pizza box shut.
Don't be crazy, Katie. It's only 5 o'clock.
Lottie wiped her hands on her jeans and called a taxi to take her daughters home.
Should she be worried?
Do you think...
Is Sean all right, ma'am?
Katie asked.
I'm so freaked out over Jason.
They are fine. Now go home and wait. I'll get my mother to call round.
No!
Chloe said.
We'll be fine without Granny. You'll be home soon, won't you?
Things are a bit hectic at the moment, but I promise, as soon as I can escape, I'll be home.
First Jason, now Sean,
Katie repeated, walking down the corridor with Chloe. Lottie rubbed her hands up and down her arms, trying to ease the rising goosebumps. Sean better be at home when the girls got there. Her phone rang. Father Joe's name flashed up on the caller ID. I hope this is important, Lottie said curtly.
Just checking in to make sure you got home safely, he said.
I'm busy. I have to go. Lottie hung up. She didn't need further complications in what was already a minefield of a day. The phone rang again. Father Joe's ID. She sent the call to voicemail.
Are you not getting that?
Kirby asked, hauling his bulk through the door. Mind your own business, Lottie said.
I've the printout from Susan Sullivan's phone, same info we got from the service provider.
So, no leads there?
But we've accessed her photographs.
Really? I suppose you're going to tell me there's nothing of interest in them either.
There's just one.
Kirby handed Lottie a print. There wasn't a photograph in Susan Sullivan's house, but she had one on her phone. Curious woman, Lottie remarked to herself. A shady colour photograph of a tiny baby. Light hair and thin cheeks, eyes closed. Was this all Susan was left with? The only image the poor woman had of the child she'd given birth to? And where did she get the photo from? Holding the picture, Lottie felt sadness for the murdered woman and her fruitless quest for her child. She hoped she could at least bring Susan's killer to justice.
Any word on the body at the railway? Lottie asked. It's been removed from the scene, Kirby said.
Her mobile rang. Boyd.
I remembered something.
His voice was low and brittle.
You should be resting.
I'm tied to this bed with tubes and wires. I'm going nowhere.
Good.
You need to get better, soon. Lottie couldn't dwell on the image of an incapacitated Boyd.
What do you remember?
Not much, but I sensed there was something familiar about my assailant. I still can't pinpoint what exactly. He was fit and strong. I got a good kick at him, and I think my fist connected with his jaw. So, whoever it is, he could have a bad limp or a bruised face.
I've got a bruised face, Lottie said, feeling a weight lifting for the first time that day.
I imagine yours is prettier than his.
Thank you, Boyd. You're a tonic.
I could do with one. I'll keep a lookout for fit guys with bruises and limps. Boyd laughed weakly.
Lottie saw the missed call flashing on her phone with Father Joe's name. Boyd, can you remember?